This is Sunday, May 22nd, 2011. It's a little after 10 a.m. We're in the History Room. I'm Derek Van Loan, and this is my friend Roger Packer, who lived in Mill Valley in 1960?
60, yes.
1960, yeah. Up on East Blithedale. And he has a few interesting things to say with some background about Alan Watts.
Yeah. Anyway, so I met Alan that time, and he said, well, I'm going to have a seminar tomorrow. Would you like to come by? And I said, I'd be very interested. So I went there, and there were mostly ladies there, mostly teachers, I found out. And he was wearing a black judo outfit, actually, that he'd had dyed. And he was sat lotus position at the head of this group. And after the seminar, they had a question time, and this lady said, well, how do you express death to a child? So Alan looked away and he said, death is nothing but a mirror image of before life, and should be looked on as that. But we cannot explain that to a child. We have to stimulate them and say, what do you think? And I always remember that, because that was always, I think, very typical of Alan in a way. I think he stimulated all of our minds in lots of ways, which I admired him for.
Now, that took place on the ferry boat Vallejo?
Yes, that was on the Vallejo.
But later on, he came up to Roger Summers' place.
Yes, he came up to Roger Summers' place.
In Mill Valley.
And he had quite a few friends over. He had, I remember this, he was dressed in the same outfit one day. And he said, what do you think of this, Roger? And he said, it's very much like a Japanese gong. Listen. And it was nothing but a tank, welding tank, which had been cut off from the bottom. And he hit it twice, and it resonated all through the valley. It was beautiful, all the way back again. And that was typical of the man, too. He was very interested in anything, artistic and ethereal. One day I went to one of his parties, and I was talking to people in general, and then I heard this beautiful music. And it was a harp played by his son-in-law. I believe the name was Joel, and it certainly was very nice, I must say. But anyway, as for Alan, he was a somewhat of an enigma and curiosity within himself. He once went sailing with me on my boat with his father, and at that point, he was with Mary Jane, who was a quite a conservative lady. He had Joel at the party, if I remember rightly, and we were sort of all emerging, talking about different things, and he was quite difficult to follow. Because I've done an average amount of reading, but Alan could come out rather like a magician with a rabbit. He could pull out on any subject an author, and he could quote him for at least 5 or 10 minutes on exactly what he said. And I think he was very lucky. I think he had a total recall mind for that. He'd once been selected to a major church in England, and he was one of the 12 who had been selected. And he told me that at the end of it all, he still couldn't quite mesh with the English church, and felt that he still wanted to be a searcher of religion. So he finally ended up in, after going to Japan, he finally ended up in San Francisco, and then in Mill Valley. He liked Mill Valley because of the tranquility of the place. He liked it because of the aesthetic trees. He loved the trees. We would often go practicing archery together. And he would have a recurve bow, a Japanese recurve bow, and I had a long bow. And he would ask me, he said, "When you were very young, Roger, did you rush through the high grass and have fun in general?" And we had targets put out, and you would walk along this lane, and on either side there would be these targets, and they would be somewhat hidden. And I said, "Yes, as a matter of fact, when I was younger, I used to do that." And funnily enough, he was very interesting because a lot of his youth he couldn't quite remember, and so some of his youth, when he wrote the book In My Own Way, I flatter myself, but I think he actually used some of mine as an example for himself, which I didn't mind at all. I was very flattered. But I must say he was one of the main people who opened my eyes to the rest of the world.
That's great, Roger. Can you tell me about Roger Summers' house?
Roger Summers' house?
Yeah.
Oh, he, Roger, got an offer from the Parks Commission, and they said, "Would you like to sell your property?" And so he said yes. So he thought of an incredible figure. He thought of a figure and then dumped it. That was very typical of Roger. A very sharp man. And so he doubled it, and before he died, he would leave it to the state, but before he died, he had the money right away and went to Hawaii, and I hear he's got a huge estate over there. I haven't seen him in years.
Now, he built a house. He built a house here in Mill Valley.
Oh, yes.
That he used to have,
yes.
Alan over.
Yes. He built quite a few houses hither and yon, and I worked for him a couple of days or a couple of weeks. I've forgotten how long. But anyway, he would do amusing things. He would totally construct the house, and then he knew which side the view was on, so he would bore a small hole, and he had this peep thing, and he would look through and say to the owner, "Now, how do you like this view?" And the owner would come up and say, "Yes, that looks pretty good. Okay, that's the size of the hole. Cut it out. Jeet, 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 jeet." And that would be the window. So the place looked, for anybody who was a bystander, a little bit strange if you looked at it from the outside, but from the inside it was glorious. And so one of the owners said, "Well, I'm not catering to other people, I'm catering to myself." And I thought, well, that makes sense, you know. Roger Summers was a real character. He would have a piano, and it rotted away, and he had this piano out on a flat, and you'd all pick up, everybody would pick up a small pebble stone, and he'd say, "Well, what do you think about this?" And you'd be able to make a statement, and then you'd throw the pebble on the piano to see if it bounced twice or three times on the strings, and it would make a certain amount of time, and if it sounded good, he'd say, "Yes, that clicks." He was a real old tease. And he had an excellent cabinet maker there. I wish I could remember his name. I don't. But he made quite a few pie-shaped buildings, which Alan had one of them. And so anyway, Alan told me that all these people that I would be meeting when I went to Bristol and London, and he had a lot of addresses for me, and he liked to crack the old booze now and again, but I don't blame him. He was quite under a lot of pressure, as he had two families to support at that time. Besides being a conservative bloke, he was a lot of fun. I knew him a little bit later, and from my place I could see his place, and it was a huge window, and one night I see the lights almost like a stage, and there he is dressed in Japanese attire, and I look through, and I knew it was rude to stare, but I stared because he had a Japanese samurai sword. And at that time, I knew this red-haired lady, as he did, and she loved to dance. So all of a sudden, here she comes in long flowing gowns, dancing around the place, rather like a dance to spring.
That was on the ferry boat Vallejo.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there's Alan with a sword, swooshing it around in time to the music. She's dancing to the time music. Oh, if I'd have just had a video, it would have been wonderful. But I didn't, but there we are.
Yeah. Roger, you told me about these Hawaiian women. They were quite elderly, and they lived here in Mill Valley.
Yes. I'm just trying to remember, I must have a little bit of old-timeness because I can't remember her name.
What part of the Mill Valley did they live in?
She was, up Throckmorton? Yes, she and her sister had come from Hawaii originally. Then somehow they wound up on the east side of the United States. So at that point, the Panama wasn't cut through. And she told me something like Elaine or Eva. That was her name, Eva. She told me how she'd sailed around the bottom and come up through.
Around Cape Horn.
And sailed. Then her sister had to come around. She came around the bottom of the Cape. Not Cape Wood, with what's it called?
Cape Horn,
that's it. Past Rio Paraiso, of course. Came all the way to San Francisco, and the captain didn't want to come in here because it was a very strong tides, and it was the time of tide shifting, so he was a little bit hesitant. The winds were very variable, so we waited, and Eva's sister, who was a little bit on the edge anyway, was going a little bit crazy because she didn't like waiting so long. And finally, after about 5 or 6 days, they sail in to San Francisco, and Eva met her at the dock, and then they went back to Mill Valley. And she said at that time that there were very, very few people who lived in Mill Valley. They were mostly holiday homes for, you know, the summer. In other words, they didn't worry too much about foundations or anything like that. They were mostly carved into the clay, and the whole building was made very rapidly. So, along came the earthquake in San Francisco, and all of a sudden, Mill Valley looked more desirable. And so a lot of people, including Eva, moved over to Mill Valley, and that was really the start of Mill Valley per se, because all of a sudden, all the quiet, conservative people all of a sudden moved in, and there was more of a society, more of a community. All the quiet places, which were once just used for holiday, were all used right away, and that was the start of Mill Valley proper. Yeah.
Oh, that's very interesting. Of course, the ships in those days, with no engine, a sailing ship would have no engine, and if you didn't want to hire a tug, you were at the mercy of the winds and tides,
right,
and you had to be pretty careful. Later on, you worked for Eva.
Yes, I worked for her, and she was a very nice person. Her husband had been an architect and designer and builder, and he'd built this house for her. He had a Model A, which he would crank up and potter around with. And Eva said he was a wonderful man. He had one problem. Any time he came across a problem in his building, he would potter off and say, "Now I have to go and make a special tool for this problem, so if I come across it again, I'll be able to solve it." And so he'd potter off for several hours, whereas in actual fact he could have built a wall in no time at all. It would take him twice as long or three times as long, just because he wanted to make the special tool. Does that sound familiar? Anyway, so so he was like that. He was evidently a nice person, but she had very, they both had actually, her and her husband, had planted all these fruit trees. Some of them very unusual, some of them not so unusual, and most of them doing well, funny enough. And so she would pick this fruit, and what she couldn't can, she would make into wine. And I was her chief wine taster. She was always invited me to lunch, and then she'd say, "Now, I want you to taste this." And I had to be very careful not to be crocked in the afternoon at the end of the lunch, so I didn't cut my hand off, you know. I was a carpenter at the time, and I'd paint all the rooms. But I must say, Eva was always very good to me, wonderful person. And her sister, as I was leaving to sail down to Mexico, her sister, I recall, ended up down in Mill Valley in her bedclothes on with her slippers on.
The sister and the two sisters still live together?
Yes, they live together. And and she would disappear, and Eva would go into a flat spin saying, "Where's your car?" And I'd say, "Right outside." "We've got to get in, we've got to get..." I think her name was Myra, her sister. "We've got to get Myra back." I said, "Well, where is she?" "Downtown, in her bedroom clothes." I said, "Well, what's wrong with that? This is the 19th century, Eva. Don't worry." "And well, no, we have to get her. This is obscene." And I said, "What do you mean obscene?" "Well, she could be obscene." I said, "Is she usually obscene?" "No." "Well, don't worry. Let's just go get her and don't worry." So we would get her. We'd find her talking to somebody or talking to a dog or just wandering around looking in midair. And we would quite often get her back and home. She was something else, I'll tell you. Both of them were. I used to be highly amused by them because that's what gave a lot of the flavor in those days were the eccentrics that lived here, I must say. And I always admire that because somehow today we're not living with many eccentrics. We seem to be cast in the shadows of mundaneness somehow. I don't know how it's happened, but it certainly has. Yeah.
One more question, Roger. The lane that you and Alan Watts would walk on with your bows and the archery targets,
yes.
Do you remember where that was? Was that near Roger Summers' house? Or?
Yes, it was right near Roger Summers' house, right near the top. And Roger Summers had...
up Montford, was it?
I can't remember exactly, but he had quite a few acres. It was very wild, and he had the common sense to not build right on top of each other, which I thought was very tasteful. You drived in the middle, and you could walk to your house,
yeah,
you know, where you lived, your abode, by a central theme, and everything branched out from the central car park, as it were.
Yeah.
And it was all very aesthetically done. There weren't any trees cut down unless they really needed to be.
Yeah.
He had good taste, and he was a very jolly person. Margot St. James, he was very friendly with at the time, and she was really outrageous, flashing policeman in San Francisco.
Yeah, she was the president of the Hookers Union,
yes,
as I remember.
Yes, president of the Hookers. She was outrageous. She would wear this nun's habit and prance around here and there. Luckily, she didn't prance around too much in Mill Valley, but she certainly did in San Francisco. And actually, in a way, she did do a few good things, I think, for women's rights. So she was like a double-headed, you know, in a way, a coin, as it were. Yes, she was a bit of fun, she was. And so I must remember that I have very good, happy memories of that era, which was in the 60s mostly. All this happened, yeah.
Mill Valley's been through a few changes since then.
Oh, yes. Well, it's like all of these places. Luckily, that most of the places, because of the redwoods, most people are pretty woodsy here. Yeah. And so most of it's good taste. A lot of these places which develop, somehow they don't have a good feel about it. Well, they have a good feel, but it's mostly almost mechanical. It's they paint everything, you know, a different color, which is okay, but there's I like the muted colors personally. Yeah. They show a bit more taste, I think.
Can you think of any other thing about Mill Valley that might be interesting to people?
Oh, well, there weren't so many coffee houses. Just like in Sausalito, they had people would go to the corner drugstore for their coffee. The station house was looked more like a station house downtown. That's where I met Art Grant, who used to live here. What a character he was. Art, I somehow think he made up the name. He was a guy from New York who was rotund and fast-talking, and he always had a quip or a joke to make. A lot of fun, Art was. And
An artist. He was an artist. Right?
Yes. He was a, what I call, an avant-garde junk man. He would take pieces of junk. If you were digging something up, he'd say, "Oh, let me see that. Yes, I'll..." And he had something for everything. You know, he'd start with a rusty this, and then he put a chrome piece of that, and before you knew where you were, you'd have usually a face, or it was something resembling a human frame. And he was a lot of fun, he was. He had several places, and he eventually, I think, died in Mill Valley, but I used to say, "Now, Art, did you really make this name up, or were you christened Art Grant?" And it used to tease him no end, you know. I'd say, "I'm sure you made it up, Art. You know, nobody could end up a name like that and not wish for a grant for their art." You know, so we had a lot of fun.
Well, Roger, this has been fantastic. Thanks. I'm going to see if I can figure out how to turn this machine off. And hopefully unless you have anything else to add.
No, I can't think of anything at the moment.
Well, this is great. This is Roger Packer, and it's Sunday morning, the 22nd of May, and we're here in the History Room in Mill Valley, and I'm going to press the stop button.